Welcome to the Vegan Changemaker podcast. My name is June Fuchs, and I'm on the quest to veganize over 50% of the global human population by the year of 2030. Sounds delusional? Well, obviously, I can't do it alone, and that's why in this podcast, you're getting to meet some of the most influential, inspiring, and impactful vegans there are. May this episode help you create more vegan impact in the world, because we need your help as well, dear vegan friend.
Aloha, dearest listeners, to the Changemaker podcast. We have another episode today with another really special guest. I only interview special guests, right? So today I'm here with Ronnie Lee. Ronnie Lee has been vegan for 50 years. So that's 1972. And he's also one of the co-founders of the Animal Liberation Front. The man has been to prison, very dedicated activist. And today he's really focused on vegan outreach and helping activists and vegan activists to stay mentally balanced at the same time as being an activist, because it can be really draining. And this is what I'm talking about all the time anyway. So I thought it would be super cool to have him here. He offered himself. Hey, Ronnie, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, doing okay.
Love that. You're based in Australia, correct?
No, in England.
Oh, in England. Oh, weird.
Whoa. Yes, near, not too far from Birmingham in central England.
There we go. The people cannot see it, but in your video background, you have a flag of veganism. The official vegan flag is hanging behind you. So you're truly dedicated. You turned vegan in 1972. I wasn't born back then. That was about 23 years before I was born. So what was it like? Like, give us a little insight into how that was like, turning vegan back then.
Well, kind of how I went vegan very quickly was my sister's first husband was vegetarian, and I was very curious, and this was before they got married, when she was going out with him. I was very curious about why he was a vegetarian. I thought this was strange, and he explained that it was because he felt it was wrong that animals should be killed for us to eat, because it wasn't necessary. And he was also a very fit guy. He was represented the county as a junior athlete. So it certainly, and he'd been vegetarian for many years since a young boy. And it certainly hadn't done him any harm. I was a huge meat eater at the time. But this played on my mind, you know, the fact that Stephen, his name was, that he was vegetarian and he was so kind of fit and healthy. And just after two or three days, I decided I'd become vegetarian as well. And for a couple of years, I was just vegetarian. I wasn't aware of what happened to animals in the dairy industry or the egg industry, or really of any other issues relating to the oppression of animals, such as experiments and hunting and zoos, circuses, et cetera, et cetera. And then I picked up a copy of a magazine from the Vegetarian Society, and there were articles about all these things in it, and I was horrified at the extent of the oppression of other animals. And I got in touch with the Vegan Society, very quickly became vegan, and kind of shortly after that got involved with the Hunt Saboteurs, and really things went from there. But it was I was determined to be vegan. It did help that the Vegan Society existed at the time, and but it still exists. But very important for giving help and advice to people wanting to become vegan. So that was very important to me, to get the help and advice from them. And but actually, sort of living as a vegan in terms of food was really quite difficult in those days. It was okay for kind of home cooking, because you could cook. I mean, we've had vegan food forever, haven't we? Because vegan food is the nuts, the grains, the vegetables, the fruit. All that's vegan food. We've had that for thousands and thousands of years, haven't we? And just having basic skills, the cooking stuff, you could make food out of those things at home, and that's what I did. Eating out was difficult because very few restaurants and cafes had anything that vegans could eat. Almost everything was cooked in animal fat or contained animal products. And also shopping was difficult. Obviously, just buying the fruit and vegetables and stuff like that was okay. But when it came to stuff like bread, in those days, most bread contained animal fat, so it wasn't even vegetarian. And even things you wouldn't think about, like peanut butter. The peanut butter, certainly at the time in the UK, peanut butter contained beef fat. What? We didn't know this. It contained beef fat. Yeah. And the problem was that in the early 70s over here, there wasn't a requirement for the ingredients to be displayed on food products. So you didn't know what was in it.
Whoa.
And so we were happily eating peanut butter, thinking it's just peanuts. And then one guy wrote to the company. I think there was only one brand of peanut butter around at the time. And he wrote to the company, what's in your peanut butter? And we said, well, it's no point in writing to them. It's only peanuts. He said, no, I'm going to do that. And wrote to them. Later came back. One of the ingredients was beef fat. And so we couldn't eat the peanut butter anymore. And so it was difficult. We had the two problems. First of all, so many things contained animal products. And secondly, certainly in the early 70s, it changed a few years later, but in the early 70s, a lot of products, you couldn't find out what was in them. You didn't know what was in them. So it wasn't easy. It was more difficult kind of to, I suppose, maintain a vegan diet in those days. Because of those problems, and obviously over the years that's greatly improved.
Wow, that's so interesting to me personally, especially because like I haven't met a lot of people which turned vegan. Actually, I just interviewed someone from Australia. That's why I had like this head link before that you're based in Australia, and he's been vegan for 42 years. So, right. So I was like, I'm getting these insights and I haven't heard that before. That is so far out of how I grew up and how I was able to maintain a vegan diet, knowing what the ingredients are, because I mean, as I grew up, and I guess most of the people that are listening to this podcast can relate to that. You just know the ingredients when you buy something. Mm. The bigger problem that we're having now is to actually take a minute to turn around that packaging and read the ingredients, which for a lot of people is an effort, but I'm like, no, I want to know what I eat. So
yeah,
I want to know what's in there. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, there's the joke about you can always tell the vegan in the supermarket because they're the person reading the packet. But in those early days, that wasn't the case because there wasn't anything on the packet to read. In most cases, some companies voluntarily put the ingredients on, but it wasn't a requirement, and so a lot of them didn't. But thankfully, that changed. You know, later in the 70s, that changed, and then it became easier, and then we all started reading the packets. But in the early days, there were people that compiled lists. You know, people that had kind of written away to these companies, found out what was inside things, and they kind of compiled lists of kind of what was vegan and what wasn't, and that was helpful. So it was difficult, but I kind of was determined to be vegan and to stay vegan, despite the difficulties of kind of maintaining the vegan diet in that way. The rest of my family weren't vegan. My mum and dad were meat eaters. My sister became vegetarian at the same time as me, but she didn't. She has now become vegan, but she didn't go vegan at the time. So I was the only vegan in the house.
How about your parents? Did they turn vegan during their lifetime?
No, they didn't. No, I mean, my mum ended up eating very little meat, but neither of them went vegan. And I kind of, yes, I was disappointed about that. But I think once again, this is another thing that kind of, I think, sort of plays into the mental health aspect, that kind of. People say that they, when they become vegan, they're kind of given a hard time by their parents, by their family. Quite a lot of people say that. With me, it was the opposite. I gave them a hard time. I was constantly going, why aren't you vegan? Do you know that that's a dead animal you're eating? And all that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think it was that was the best tactic. I don't think it kind of, it obviously didn't persuade them to go vegan. In fact, I think it probably made them put up barriers to have this person constantly going on at them about it. And secondly, it kind of created stress in me. You know, to think that I kind of almost felt I had this obligation to constantly harangue them. You know, why weren't they vegan? Because for me, it was a very quick process. As soon as I learned about what happened to the animals, I went vegan. It didn't take any time at all. It was just sorting out the practicalities of, you know, where can I get the stuff and you know, what can I cook and that kind of thing. It wasn't the sort of philosophical side of it. Kind of came straight away that was what I wanted to do. And so when other people weren't like that, I couldn't understand it. I think I expected, and this was a mistake I made, and I think it probably a mistake that kind of a lot of vegans make as well. I expected that other people would kind of be the same as me. If I could be affected in that way and I could change quickly in that way, then they could too. But that isn't the case. You know, people are different. Not everyone reacts like that. And that isn't, you know, always the process through which people change. And so I think it wasn't good for me and for my mental health to put myself under the pressure of thinking that I had to constantly sort of kind of go on at my parents. And I suppose because they were the people closest to me, I felt a special obligation to kind of turn them vegan more than anyone else. And I think had I had a gentler approach, they knew I was vegan and they knew why I was vegan. I didn't have to constantly repeat that. And the fact that I was there as a vegan in the house would constantly remind them about it. And I think it would have been better to kind of do it that way, really. And it would have been, probably would have had more chance of changing them, but also it would have been less stressful for myself.
I hear that. There's a quote that just shot through my mind when you said you're being in the house and simply your presence already reminds them of it. And that's a quote by, I think it was an art teacher in the early 1930s or 40s. I'm not sure. I learned that at school when I studied graphic design back then. Paul Wazlawick, and he says, you cannot not communicate. You cannot not communicate. So simply by being you and being your presence, you already communicate. And I observe that as well. I guess we both have noticed that in the activism scene, there is this constant urge to let people know. And I mean, there's jokes about it. How do you know who's the vegan? They tell you. I disagree with that by now. I disagree because people point it out. They're like, oh, you're eating salad again. Are you vegan? And like, I think people point you out on it because you cannot not communicate it. Simply you choosing what you eat on a daily basis communicates already and indicates for people, oh, this is might be a vegan, or, you know.
I think that's true. I think there's kind of, I think in a home situation where you're constantly with people, then that certainly is the case. And I also think, you know, in a work situation where you're constantly with people, and you're eating vegan food, and people are going to ask you about it and say, well, what's that you're eating? And then you can explain what it is and why you're eating it. I tend to sort of, if people ask me why I'm vegan, I say, well, hang on a minute, why aren't you vegan? isn't that what we should be discussing, really? You know, I'm living a life where I don't, you know, consume other animals. I'm not responsible for their slaughter and suffering in that way. So isn't that what everyone should be doing? You know, kind of in that way where you're making sort of more a general comment about isn't that what everyone should be doing, instead of like attacking that person, you know, individually and personally, if you see what I mean. And I I think in situations where you're constantly with people and constantly with the same people, often you don't have to say very much. You can just, you know, pass on a message through ordinary conversations without kind of going out your way to constantly hit people over the head with veganism. But I think when you're talking about other, you know, other aspects of life, in when you're dealing with people that you're kind of not in that familiar situation with, then I think it is important to get out there and spread the message. You know, it's important to get out there and do outreach. And there's lots of different ways of doing that.
Yeah, would you like to share a little bit with us, like what ways of vegan outreach did you know? I think that could be interesting because...
Oh, well, I think this... I mean, I can start by talking what we do locally in my own vegan group. We'll do information stalls. I mean, sometimes these are in the street, but more often, we hold them at various events. We'll hold them at community events, at environmental events. Like, for instance, we have these kind of fairs locally, small fairs called Greener Living Fairs, which are to promote sort of sustainable living and that type of thing. We'll have stalls there. We'll have stalls at health fairs. We've had stalls at the local kind of horticultural show, because there's people there growing vegetables, and obviously there's a connection between veganism and vegetables, so they invite us along to hold a stall. Because veganism touches on all these different things, doesn't it? It touches on health, touches on the environment, it touches on, you know, being able to feed more people, and obviously it touches on animals and, you know, animal protection. So it gives us all these opportunities to hold information stalls at different events, and that's what we do. The other thing
like, just to zoom in on the information stalls, just being present with like a desk or a layout and with information brochures and with your own presence, yes, to answer questions, correct?
That's right, yeah. I mean, you kind of have to have give people a reason to come to the store. So sometimes we'll have vegan food samples, and we'll have a sign saying free food, come get the free food samples, and we'll give out samples of, it's usually vegan cheese and plant milks and vegan yogurt, and it can be, and we'll have vegan chocolate buns for the children and that kind of thing, you know. So, you know, sometimes it's savory stuff as well, particularly kind of coming up to Christmas, we'll have vegan alternatives to kind of, you know, the sort of food people eat at Christmas. So there's that, so that attracts people, because they can come up and have some free food, or at least experience, you know, curious about what things taste like, so that attracts people. And the other thing we do as well, especially when we're not doing the sort of food outreach, is we'll have a sign saying, you know, free recipe booklets, and we have free vegan recipe booklets that we give to people. So it's kind of giving people a reason to kind of come up and, you know, come to the store. And then once they're at the store, can engage them in conversation. But I think it's always good to have, the literature is very important, because often the time for conversation with people is quite limited, and you can never really cover all the aspects in a short conversation. So it's important to give people literature to take away with them that contains that, so they've got something to take away. You sort of introduce them to it, the idea at the store, and then they've got literature to take away and read in their own time to learn more. And that's what we you know, we have these very we use a recipe booklet produced by an organization over here called Animal Aid, and it's very good because there's really pictures of lovely vegan food on the front. There's some really nice recipes that are like cheap to, you know, not expensive to put together at the front of the booklet, and then at the back it gives the reasons, you know, the ethical reasons for being vegan, and there's no graphic stuff in it or anything like that, so it's quite easy for people, and so that's good, because people think they're getting a recipe booklet, but when they look through it they learn about the the ethical reasons for going vegan as well. So it's kind of perfect is a perfect sort of tool for, you know, introducing veganism to people.
Yeah, very humble, not pushy. And
no.
Keeps them in charge of how deep they dive. And
because people have to think that they have made the decision. You know, if people think they're being forced into something, they resist. So they've got to feel that it's they themselves that are making the decision. And and what we do is provide them the information that they can use to make the decision, that can help them make that decision. The more information you see, really, that's how I went vegan. I didn't have someone kind of get hold of me and say, you've got to go vegan, you know, what's the matter with you, or anything like that. I just picked up a magazine, and there were just articles in the magazine about things. And that's how I went vegan. You know, no one was forcing me. I was just provided with the information. I think the more information we can provide to people about vegan, the more people will go vegan. And that information can be in different forms. I mean, like, you know, the kind of old-fashioned method, in a way, which is still very very valuable, I think, and relevant, is literature, you know, leaflets, booklets, articles in magazines. And we managed to get a lot of letters promoting veganism in our local newspaper. We've got this little team of letter writers, because if one person constantly write letters, they'll get fed up publishing letters from one person. They have a little team. We've got this little team, and anything in the paper that kind of that they can kind of hook veganism onto, then one of the team will do a letter, and then there's usually a link to the vegan society. So there's a, you know, people want to do more can follow a website link. And although, you know, newspapers and, in a sense, I suppose, especially local newspapers, don't have the readership now they used to do because of the internet, you know, still thousands of people read them, and the letters page is a very popular page in the newspaper. And so that's, you know, that's getting information about veganism to thousands of people just through somebody writing a letter to a newspaper. So, and it's a very easy way, very kind of stress-free way of doing it. And the other thing we do a lot of is what we call door dropping, you know, delivering leaflets through people's letterboxes. It may be a different situation how it's all set up in other countries, but here you can go around and put leaflets through people's letterboxes. And we do a lot of that with vegan leaflets. And once again, we don't use leaflets that got any graphic images on, because a child might pick that up and an angry parent might come running down the road after you. There's no need for that. You know, you don't need graphic images to spread the message.
No.
And we do lots of that. I mean, coming up to Christmas, we delivered about 8,000 leaflets encouraging people to have a compassionate Christmas and, you know, have a, you know, eat vegan at Christmas and then stay vegan afterwards. And these are what I would call kind of really low stress activities. You know, you're there as a person who's friendly, who's offering information, who's there to help people. You're not getting angry. You're not shouting. You're not stressing yourself in doing that. And I think, you know, some of the things that some other types of outreach can really be quite stressful. I mean, other types of outreach people do. I mean, you know, there's these various groups, Anonymous for the Voiceless, and I think there's Earth Things Experience, isn't there? And there's groups like, new ones coming along, like We the Free. There's loads of different ones that stand with screens, and then other people give information out. And that's fine. I think, you know, that can be a good way of spreading the message, because especially nowadays, a lot of people are kind of more drawn to videos, aren't they, than they are to the written world. And a lot, I'm always very curious about how people became vegan, and I'll always ask them.
Yeah, there's so many avenues.
Ask you how you became vegan. because it's, you know, it helps build up a picture of all the different ways. And really, there are loads and loads of different ways that people became vegan. But I think more these days, a lot of it, especially younger people, is through, oh, I saw a video on YouTube, or somebody told me about a video and I watched it.
Yeah.
So it's more through videos now. I mean, a lot of people are still become vegan through the, you know, reading something.
Yeah.
But videos have become increasingly important. So I can understand that some people, that would be what would have an effect on, you know, on some people more than possibly a leaflet. So I think that's a good way of doing it. But then you get things like, for instance, the SAVE movement, where people go outside slaughterhouses, watch the animals go in. And then I think the idea of how that spreads the vegan message is they take videos of it and that's shared on social media. People see it. And yes, I think people have become vegan through that. But I regard that as kind of a really very stressful way of doing it. I worry about the mental health of people doing that, because they're seeing animals going in to be slaughtered. They might be able to give those animals a little bit of comfort, or some of a little bit of comfort before they go in. But at the end of the day, they can't stop them going to slaughter. It must that must take a heavy toll on people's mental health. It's not something I would do. It's not something I would go in for, because and I think people are drawn to that because it's highly emotional. And I think what happens is people kind of can make the mistake that something that kind of raises their own emotions will have more effect on other people somehow. If I do a highly emotional thing, then somehow that's going to change other people more.
Oh, that's a good
than
one.
If I do a thing that's not emotional. And I think that's not the case. I don't think there's any evidence that something like the SAVE movement creates more vegans than something like giving out a leaflet or having an information stall.
I find, as you said before, right, you said like some people need a video and some people need a newspaper and something.
Yes.
That it really needs something different for everybody. But I agree. And yeah. I also want to emphasize on like making sure that when we as activists engage in these different kinds of ways of being an activist, because there are so many, you just riff through a lot of different ones.
And yes.
We got to make sure that when we're there, that we can really be there and be present, and that we don't carry on the burden and the baggages of these events, right? I've been in the situation where I was present with animals that are about to go into the slaughterhouse. And here in Bali, it's pretty omnipresent because we have a lot of small trucks with chickens and pigs that are just about to go. So sometimes I drive next to them and I, you know, send them compassion in my heart, but then I drive past because I understand that my comp, my presence, allows me to choose the right words to reach people at the heart space, in the compassion space where we want to reach them, and not with the anger and frustration. I love the way you said, can you hear the dogs howling in the background?
I can, yes.
Wow, they're going wild. The owner just left and sometimes they just go wild for a second. But I'll mute myself in a bit because I have one more question for you that I would love for you to
answer. Yes, yeah.
Like when you have one word or, you know, like a really piece of golden advice for anybody who's active out there, but who feels a bit drained, feels a bit stressed, who goes into these situations where they can't really cope with them and it affects their lives. What would you want them to know?
Well, I'd say, first of all, I'd say to people that it's easily possible to carry out very effective outreach in a non-stressful way. And if people, you see, I think what can happen is some people, you know, will do very stressful stuff, affects them mentally, and then they basically kind of drop out and, you know, don't do anything else or feel unable to. And what I'd say to those people is you can still carry on spreading the message. You can spread the message in a way that causes minimum stress to yourself, and you can make these events actually enjoyable. Like, for instance, you can do an information store with other vegans, and afterwards you can all go to a cafe, probably a vegan cafe, or certainly one that's got vegan options, you know, and enjoy some nice time together afterwards. All these things can be low stress, and they can be enjoyable. So you know, you don't have to be in an all or nothing situation whether it's either the highly stressful thing or it's nothing. There's a lot of, like, you know, low stress activities that can be that are extremely important and can, you know, create a lot of vegans. And I think it's one thing I'd kind of, the other thing I'd say is that I think that activism in itself, certainly the right sort of activism, can be really good for the mental health of vegans. Because one thing I found myself that obviously it is very distressing to be aware of what happens to the animals and kind of how we deal with that. And how I've dealt with that is doing something about it, that I'm not this helpless recipient of all this horrific, you know, knowledge of what happens to the animals. In actually doing something, trying to do something about it, not only am I helping the other animals, but I'm also helping myself mentally, because I'm doing something about it rather than let that just constantly attack me. And so I think that's important. And the other thing I think is for people to think that, well, all these activities whereby we promote veganism, they're kind of so important to carry out. For instance, everyone who's, you know, like a vegan or a genuine vegan cares about the animals, you know, wants an end to the oppression of other animals. And you know, that's the reason they become vegan, and you know, what they're doing is important. They're no longer part of that. They're no longer, you know, buying into that oppression or trying their best not to. But in a sense, that's kind of not enough while loads of other people are still, you know, perpetuating that oppression. And so it is important to educate, to do our utmost to educate others. But as I've said before, that needn't be stressful, and it can be, you know, there can be a very enjoyable aspect to it as well. And the other thing I think I'd say finally, really, is that none of these things happen, all these kind of outreach activities that go on that are very important, none of those things happen unless someone organises them. I mean, obviously, there's lots of outreach we can do on our own. I could go out, you know, today and deliver a lot of leaflets. No one else needs to be with me. I can do it myself, and a lot of people do that. Doesn't need a lot of organising. But a lot of events involving kind of more than one person involve organisation, and someone has to organise those events or instigate those events. And if nobody does that, those things don't happen. And so I think it's important for people who are vegan to become activists, both for the well-being of the animals, and I would say for their own well-being as well. But secondly, I'd say it's really important for vegans who are activists to try to become organisers, even if it's just in a small way in their own local community, getting together, getting some other vegans involved, because of course there's vegans are everywhere now, getting some other vegans involved and, you know, getting out there and doing a bit of outreach with them. And if enough of us did that, you know, we have so many more vegans now than we used to do. But I think the sad thing is only a tiny percentage of vegans are actually active. But if a lot more could become active, just think of where we could go, just think of what we could achieve. And so I think it's really important for all vegans to consider that, and all vegans to get active in whatever way they can.
Amen to that. Wow. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. And again, Ronnie, I really want to thank you for this time today. We're about to close the episode of this podcast. That was really insightful, especially because it laid out the different layers of how we can be active as activists and on top of that, you even said you can be an activist and support your mental health whilst being an activist. If you choose a right way of being active for the better world, for the animals, for all sentient beings, it can support your mental health. So I'd love to, for everybody who wants to know more about you, about your backstory, because of course you haven't shared it all in this episode, there's much more to it. I guess they can reach you on Facebook. I will leave the link to your Facebook page in the show notes of the podcast episode. Do you want them to reach you somewhere else, or is Facebook cool if somebody wants to reach out to you?
Facebook is the best. Facebook's the social media I use really by far the most. There's something else that people could look at on Facebook that would kind of gives an insight into kind of, you know, my ideas really on different aspects of veganism. There's a Facebook page called Forward to Animal Liberation, and that's a series of interviews I've done with a vegan friend of mine called Wenda Shihata, who also has run a sanctuary mostly for farmed animals for many years. And she and I do this, have had this serious discussions on different topics, and people can find that, as I said, it's Forward to Animal Liberation page on Facebook. It's also on my YouTube channel as well, if people want to find out.
I'll link all of those things in the show notes.
Yeah, it's on there. But yes, certainly message me on Facebook. Even if I'm not your Facebook friend, I'll still get your message. I make sure that I check all my messages, not just ones from friends. So yes, please do get in touch if you want any help or advice about vegan outreach, any ideas about what you can do in your local community, because I think it's really important that wherever we live, we think about how can I kind of veganize my local community. You know, what can I do here? A lot of vegan outreach takes part in the center of big cities, but the people that go into the center of big cities to do the outreach, which is good, I think it's great that that's happening, but I think if all the people that do that thought about, you know, doing some outreach in their local areas, where maybe a different sort of outreach suitable to, you know, to where they live. But I think that's important. So we get vegan outreach everywhere, and we get vegan outreach going on as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes to that. Yes to that. Thank you so much, Ronnie. I hope some people will reach out to you if they need it. And by the way, the same time for me. If you want to reach out to me as well, Facebook is my outreach place where you can reach me. You wanted to add something?
No, I said yes. I'm very happy to help and encourage anyone, you know, to do outreach. I think it's kind of so important. There are other things we haven't spoken about, like for instance, one of the things we do a lot locally is social media advertising, which once again is a really low stress activity, isn't it? And it's very effective. And that's something that...
You're paying, like paid advertisement on social media?
Paid advertising. You do have to pay for it, but it's a very good return. We find if you do it the right way, you get a very good return on the money you spend. And that's something so very few groups do. It can be a little bit complicated to set up. Once you set it up, you know, then you sort of don't have to worry. And I can help people with that as well. You have to have a Facebook page to do it. So you have to set up a Facebook page if you've not got one, not like a personal profile or group, but an actual page. But once again, that's another thing that I can help people with. People can do that as individuals, or people can do that as part of a group.
That's really
another way of doing it.
That's really cool. I'm actually going to reach out to you after this, after finishing talking to you. I'm going to talk to you more about that. And I'd encourage everybody to, because I mean, that's a very simple way. And you say it so nicely, you say it's a low stress activism activity.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Stress, high impact.
Yes. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Well, beautiful. Yeah. Reach out to him. If you want that, reach out to me if you want to discover more mindfulness and use mindfulness as a tool to elevate your activism and your life outside of activism. That's what I teach as a mental health and mindfulness coach. And I'll leave the links to everything we talked about in the show notes, including to my website. If you want to check that out, go ahead and check that out. And much love to you all. Thanks for listening, and share it with a friend if you like what we talked about. Share it with two friends. Gosh, with 10 if you want to. Bye for now. Much love.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Vegan Changemaker podcast. Please share it with your friends, your family, your social network, and your loved ones. If you want to get your impact to the next level, I invite you to take the Vegan Impact Quiz. I created it to help you figure out what the next steps are for you to elevate your vegan impact and create more significant influence in the world. Check out the link. I left it for you in the show notes, and I'm curious to see where you're gonna land and what your next steps will be. Let's veganize this world together, dear vegan friend.